My first craft beer experience, that was very easy. I was over in America, in Washington, actually, exploring some of the surrounds. And I can remember walking into this fabulous craft beer bar and just can't remember recalling anything like it. The sheer variety and choices of the taps on the bar, the different bottles behind it. And I intended to, pop in with my wife for a quick drink, and we ended up staying a long time and just trying the different, lagers and IPAs, and then eventually stouts. And I remember trying Goose IPA, in particular Goose Island, and that was a beer that I could just happily drink. And that set off the initial passion to explore more beers that had some of those taste profiles that were quite unique at the time and maybe less so relevant in England.
Hello and welcome to Proceed to Checkout. I'm your host, Andrew Figgins, and for this season, we're spotlighting UK merchant BeerHawk and their journey running an e-commerce business using the Magento platform. The voice you just heard was BeerHawk CEO and co-founder Mark Roberts, recalling his first experience with craft beer. You'll hear similar stories as our season progresses from team members at every level. Before we dive into the technology, or should I say the Magento of it all, I think it's important to establish what BeerHawk is, so we're starting today with the company's origin story. First, a message from our Season 1 partner. Adobe has partnered with Wayflyer to provide B2C e-commerce businesses with easy, fast funding to accelerate their growth. Wayflyer tailors their funding solution for each business to fit their unique needs, while also offering marketing and inventory insights to optimize spend. Also, approved businesses can receive between $10,000 and $20 million in flexible funding within 1 to 3 days. And I thought Adele had range. Whether you're looking to fund a new campaign to say hello to your customers, or whether you need to be rolling in the deep to get your big project funded, check out wayflyer.com/adobe and join the Adobe Commerce and Magento open source merchants that are already using Wayflyer today. Okay, now it's back to business, literally. Continuing on in the conversation with Mark, I really wanted to get to the history of BeerHawk and how and why it was founded. In his words, here's what Mark had to say about the initial startup spirit of BeerHawk.
So I guess I'd always had an itch. I mean, going back to when I was a kid, probably 7 or 8, I remember spending my Saturdays in my dad's paper merchant business and his warehouse. And it was only small. There were, maybe 15 people, but it had a forklift truck and paper everywhere and a big guillotine and the office. And I remember, just feeling the sense of what a small business could be and how, one day I'd love to do something and create something that was my own business. So I knew whether it would be, beer or beverages or something totally different, I think I'd want to roll the entrepreneurial dice, but it, just trying to sort of find the idea that you want to take the bet on and the time that's right. And I think there's certainly no such thing as a perfect idea. There's certainly no such thing as a perfect business plan. I mean, if you looked at our initial business plan and you compared that to what actually happened, okay, there are some similarities, but it looks very different. And I think the most important thing is taking the decision to give it a go, and then being fully immersed and there in the business, able to make decisions and pivot where needed to get it going. Said when we thought about launching the business, I spoke to a friend who, Chris, my co-founder, who we'd sort of worked near each other when we'd both been at Procter & Gamble, but we'd never worked directly with each other. And I had seen other friends start businesses and found it an exceptionally lonely experience. So in my mind, I really wanted to be part of more than just me as a founder and sort of have a friend, confidant that we could talk to. When we launched the business and we were starting to think about, getting ideas for how to market or the types of beer we should list, all of that, of course we spoke to friends and we sort of sent the initial friends and family email out when we were ready to launch. And I think we probably expected a bit of a fanfare or at least a few orders. And we were actually a little staggered by just how quiet that response came. And I think a lot of our friends said, "Oh, this is great, wonderful. You've set up a business." But very few translated that into and I'm going to support you by maybe buying a case and giving you some feedback. And that was just an interesting realization to come to, that actually to create the demand and to start to get going, we're going to have to do a lot of the legwork ourselves and put in a lot of time to try to, you know, find strangers who are willing to buy beer from two blokes in a shed, which was how it really started.
Does hearing that not make you want to join Mark in a pub right now? No, just me? Anyway, now that we know the origins, I couldn't help but wonder about the bigger picture with craft beer's emergence in the United Kingdom and how it's different from what I used to stateside here in the U.S. Here's BeerHawk Head of Content and Community, Dan Marsham, with an explanation of how the market has evolved.
Started my journey as a consumer into craft beer as well, because obviously with the boom of craft beer in the UK, over in the States, it's been going for a long time because of the distribution laws and micro pubs and all these incredible micro breweries setting up across the States. And it flooded over here, like people like BrewDog and other brands really caught onto it and started that craft beer revolution in the UK. And I'll happily admit that my first drink of any kind of craft beer was a BrewDog IPA, and I still drink it to this day, and I still love it to this day as well. But yeah, going in and just explaining my passion for what I thought then was the craftiest of craft beers, and then finding out that when I joined with over 1,000 different craft beer SKUs on our website, that I'd only just seen the tip of the iceberg at this point. Like I said, it kind of craft beer in general sort of has its roots over in the state, mainly because of the distribution tiered laws over there and how micro brewing and micro pubs are able to sell there. And I think, as with everything, American culture really does hit home here in the UK. Cinema, TV, music really draws from over in the States, and we see a lot of those films. And I think that it kind of, that pop culture comes over to food and drink culture as well. And I think that over the last 10 years, especially in the last 5 or 6, craft beer's just skyrocketed here for that reason. I think that if you look at people in the industry like BrewDog, for example, they are kind of seen as that real innovator and the real like birth of craft beer revolution in the UK, especially on a mainstream level anyway, because they were the first kind of to come in with that really exciting branding and really bring it over here to the UK. And I think that we see trends differ over here in the UK as well. So things like gin has been through a massive resurgence. Rum is tipped to be the next best thing. And whiskey's always been a big thing over here in Ireland and in Scotland. And craft beer kind of did exactly the same thing. It became something that we might have a bit of a reputation in the UK of being somewhat of drinking a fair bit of lager on the weekends with the football or in the pub. And craft beer kind of gave you an alternative to that kind of lifestyle, in the sense that it's drinking for the real enjoyment and to try new flavors and to explore. And one thing that I was really interested about BeerHawk with, especially after speaking to Mark Roberts, was all about journey and discovery of craft beer, and how you're very rarely going to find two beers that are exactly alike, even if they're in the same style of stouts or of sour beers or of lagers or even of IPAs. They're always going to have subtle differences. And I think that's the reason why craft beer in the UK has grown so much. That and the fact that everyone wants to be a hipster nowadays, right?
What Dan shared is super fascinating and helps to illuminate what we'll find as we continue to dive into the BeerHawk story. Craft beer might have a stereotype, but its customers are varied and nothing is ever one-to-one. Continuing along this same line, I'd like to bring another voice to the table, who you'll hear from throughout this season, and that voice is Rob Flanagan, BeerHawk's head of marketing. In my first discussions with Rob, I found that he came to the industry and his role with the company from a very unique background and perspective. Rob is a true example of the many colors of professionals in e-commerce and the many approaches that are involved with this industry. Here's Rob to tell you a little bit about his story and what that's meant for the BeerHawk's journey.
I took a very circuitous route to get to BeerHawk. My career background, I was actually an anthropologist before I finally came to marketing. So I was doing a PhD in direct-to-consumer personal genetics at the University of Iceland and King's College London. And basically the Icelandic government and, well, everyone knows about the financial crash. Funding was pulled for the research, so I never got to finish my PhD, which was heartbreaking. But it meant that I rebounded into actually a fintech company So I started doing marketing for a financial technology firm. It was mainly business to business. There was an awful lot of working with brands like Morgan Stanley, very dry. I find finance very interesting anyway, but it was still pretty dry on a day-to-day for a marketer. So I ended up moving to Beerhawk, and I joined Beerhawk at a time where it was living the cliched life of it was six people in a small room, like developing something, working on it day and night. We had a warehouse on the edge of town, and we were relatively small, and it was incredible to see it grow from that to what it is today. It's been 5.5 years, I think. I lose track. But it really was so small when I started. We had one developer. We had one webmaster who kind of oversaw the creation of products and things like that. We had one person in marketing and a designer. And that was pretty much it. And I joined that team. It was super, super intimidating because it was my first time working with Magento. Previously, all my experience had been Salesforce or anything like that, like more of a B2B side of things. So I had this whole world of e-commerce just like shoved on me. And when you're sat in a room with the MD of the business and all of these people who are controlling everything, there's nowhere to hide. So you need to get to know it really fast. And that was my first ever introduction to Magento. It was definitely a trial by fire, but I'm still here 5 years later. So it must have been pretty easy to get to grips with in the end. It's been incredible just to see how it's grown. One of my first questions was we could see the Magento reporting and the lifetime sales was like £1 million. And I remember asking, you know, when do we think we'll see that reach 2 million? Is it going to be like a year, 2 years, whatever? And we're at a point now where we expect to do that in like, well, Black Friday week will blow that out of the water easily. So the scale of growth in those 5 years has just been absolutely phenomenal.
All right. So now we know a little bit more about craft beer in the UK and how Beerhawk fits in that narrative. Well, now it's time to get to the meat of what we do each day as a Magento community, the technology of this commerce platform, and more specifically, the building of websites. Bringing it back to Mark, here's some of his reflection on the early days of the Beerhawk brand and how they approached the first iterations of operating their website at beerhawk.co.uk.
If I look back to the very early days, we were both so excited and enthusiastic by setting something up that we were okay with there not being many sales or having to do so many things ourselves. I think that started to feel different after, you know, we'd probably taken 6 to 8 weeks to set up the website and get something live online. I think you'd call it an MVP. We didn't call it an MVP then. We just said, let's get a website up. And then, you know, for the next sort of 6 weeks, we got by with this enthusiasm and excitement. And I think it was only after a further sort of 6 weeks as we were starting to use a big chunk of the initial runway that we talked about. You know, we said we'd give it 6 months, see how it goes, and then sit down and make some decisions. And sales were still really low, and the audience was really low. And I think what happened is we responded by probably with hindsight doing exactly the thing that we shouldn't do, which was throw ourselves into everything that we didn't really know about. So we tried to be busy. So we did crazy things. We went to Christmas gift markets and we realized that we just didn't have the skills that everyone else at the Christmas gift market had. We tried to create some flyers and drop them off in local offices and business parks. And those things didn't really work so well. So we then started to think about, well, what are the things that between us we're actually quite good at and slightly better at than maybe other people who were setting up a beer business. And I remember we were at lunch and we were sort of joking about that. We discovered the very depressing thought that actually we were both quite good at meetings. And God, when you realize that that's one of your strengths, that's a terrible thing to realize. So then we kept playing with it and we said, okay, well, what does that mean? Well, actually, it's not just meetings, it's getting in front of people and it's trying to have the credibility to develop partnerships with people. And that came to the realization that actually maybe we should try to reach out to some other businesses who already had a customer list, who already had a customer base, and maybe they would be willing to sort of help promote our business to their customers. So one of the early businesses that we reached out to was East Coast Trains. They run the train line from London up to Edinburgh. And I remember using LinkedIn to find the managing director and saying, look, we're a really small beer business and, you know, on your route, we've not been going long, but we really think your reward scheme would be better with some of the offerings that we had. And he came back and he said, well, actually, that would be great. I mean, I'm too busy, but meet with my team. And we were able to start a partnership where East Coast Trains were then able to promote our fledgling business to 2.2 million people. And as a catalyst for getting our business going, actually, this was in the run-up to the Christmas period. That was brilliant. That really helped to sort of set it off.
Thanks for that, Mark. Before we wrap this first episode, let's bring Rob back in to share some insight as a teaser to the next part of our look at BeerHawk, where we'll be diving into more of the decision-making behind the technology and how the community has continued to shape the front-end and back-end of the BeerHawk business.
Craft beer has a stereotype for being quite poor in terms of diversity. There's a image that's conjured in people's heads when you say craft beer, and it's typically someone who's bearded with glasses wearing a check shirt, an awful lot like me, yes. It's not actually representative of BeerHawk's customer base. What we see is that there's actually a very interesting split on the BeerHawk website, and in some product categories, women outnumber men. It tends to skew a little bit older as well in terms of a demographic, which is very interesting for an e-commerce business. Typically, you would expect that to be a bit more of a younger crowd. But yeah, it is a very interesting mix of people who buy from BeerHawk. And one thing that we've experienced as well is we've started doing, like, well, before COVID, in the before time, we were doing physical events. And the people who were turning up to these events were from a very diverse background. We ourselves made an assumption that a majority of these people fit into that craft beer category, and they definitely didn't. And that, I think that's one of the benefits of an e-commerce business. People can buy from it, and it's what it means to them. Like, they're just, like, they engage with the brand, and BeerHawk's brand is definitely not very exclusory. We try and be quite straightforward. It's a little bit techy. It's obviously got the hawk. It's kind of just, yeah, like animal forward. But yeah, we don't try and exclude anyone. And as a result, our customer base is really broad. And you might not get that in a bar or something, somewhere like that, where the customers that you tend to draw in, they make the decision to stay based on the other people in the bar. So because we've not got that, like, side of things, we have quite a diverse customer base, which is great. And it, as a marketer, it keeps me on my toes, because we've learned the hard way that we can't talk about football, we can't talk about politics, we can't talk about even countries. Like, it's just like, we're much better just kind of talking honestly as ourselves and talking to our customers like normal people, and we see a great response from that. And I like to think that BeerHawk is for everyone.
I have to admit, I could talk to the whole BeerHawk team for hours and not run out of questions. I hope you enjoyed what you heard in this first installment of Proceed to Checkout and are eager to dive deeper into the ways BeerHawk's brand, website, technology, and community have continued to evolve. If you like what you're hearing, please subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever it is that you're listening to help others find us. For more information on the Magento Association, additional merchant case studies, or BeerHawk, check out the links in our show notes. Until next time, talk soon.
A standard lager, a Boss Hills Quack.
Stout, sour beers,
imperial stouts, and
IPAs.